Hello and welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we're here with Ms. Kathy O'Shea. She's a professor of English at Monroe Community College and is a 44-year migraine sufferer. She has included her condition with her passion for literature to create a book called So Much More Than a Headache, Understanding Migraine Through Literature. Kathy has transitioned from being a migraine patient to one who wants to combine her life experience and her professional expertise to help migraine sufferers understand they are not alone, and for those who are fortunate not to suffer from this condition, to be more empathetic and understanding of those who do. So, Kathy, thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you for having me. Happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about the importance of empathy. Why is empathy important for conditions like migraines?
Well, empathy, I would say, I'm glad you're starting with that because I think it's one of the best ways in which through education and through reading literature and other means that we can try to better understand a disease that's been largely misunderstood, undervalued, misdiagnosed, and considered a very invisible disease, and so largely, as I mentioned, stigmatized. And so if we, any efforts that we can, for those of us who want to advocate for migraine sufferers, if any ways that we can better educate the average person, and or even medical professionals who need that empathy in order to better treat their patients, I think we could all benefit from that, not just those of us who suffer from it, but also those around us who care about us and think they know us, but don't really understand the condition.
It's interesting you talk about understanding, because in your book, you use literature heavily. Obviously, your background as an English teacher predisposes you to that school of thought, but you use literature in a rather unique way. You use it to help people understand their own conditions, their own symptoms as it pertains to migraines. How does literature help with empathy?
Well, literature, I teach my literature students all the time that's one of the main goals I have, like even in an introduction to literature course where students come in and they aren't necessarily interested in literature at that point, and I get that opportunity to spark that hopefully with them. But then one of the main goals I have in the class is to teach them empathy and show them how literature is one of the means to, and that's why I think there's so vital all people to be more well-rounded and better human beings. So literature captures the essence of all of our joys and our pains and our sorrows and our griefs. And those are feelings and emotions that all of us can relate to at any age and any background. And it helps us confront that which we often don't want to confront, that which we hide from, that which we hide from others. It helps us deal with the ambiguity in life. And I think that's something migraine sufferers deal with all the time, is ambiguity and the gray areas of life. And that's what literature touches on. It's not black and white. It doesn't try to resolve things. It tries to get us to explore things further, dig deeper into ourselves to better understand ourselves and our own condition, and our own fears and grief and sacrifices and difficulties in life. So I think literature is one of the best means to do that.
These aren't normally things you would discuss when it comes to a medical condition, and certainly not something like a chronic condition as migraines. It's just not commonly discussed in medicine, but you talk about it. You contextualize medicine in this way. Why did you choose to describe migraines less in terms of the quantitative, data-driven medicine that we know and accept, and more in terms of this qualitative, experiential-based condition?
That's a great question. Largely because I think that's what we're in great need of. There are a lot of books out there. There are a lot of blogs, a lot of self-help books out there that kind of deal with those kinds of issues. And also doctors, of course, when you go into a doctor's appointment and you get that pain scale, I mean, there's probably nothing more frustrating and exasperating for a migraine patient than to fill out these pain scales every time we go in for treatment, because they practically bring on a migraine, to be honest with you, because they're largely irrelevant. It's not an individualized, scale. And so it's collecting quantitative data, I guess, but we all are different, and as sufferers of a chronic illness, our symptoms are different. And therefore, I find that what was really lacking, what I learned as I started to do some research into what other authors had written about migraine or experienced migraine, what I kept finding was that, first of all, there are many more than I ever imagined. It's such a stigmatized disease. It remains so that I think a lot of people don't want to talk about it. You said yourself, you don't hear about it a lot. And that's so true. I was working with a colleague that I've known for over 10 years. And I was talking to him on Saturday, and he just said to me, he'd read a recent blog I had done, and he said, "How long do these headaches last?" But see, they're right there. I mean, you want to catch it right there and say, but they're not just a headache. There's so much more than a headache. They infect our entire being. So what literature does, the reason I turned to literature is because when I was in the middle of an intractable month-long migraine, and my headache specialist had just retired, I was feeling helpless. I was feeling alone. I didn't know where to turn. And so then I finally said, why don't you turn to that which you tell everyone else to turn to, and in times like this? And so I returned to a piece of literature that I had discovered first in graduate school. And it was the first piece of literature that captured the real essence and experience of migraine, and that it brought me to tears upon reading it. And so I read that and I realized, wait a minute, there's got to be a lot more out there, a lot more literature that really captures what people are feeling and experiencing, but can't put into words. And so what I think is important through a lot of literature is that it gives the narrative, it speaks to the narrative of the experience rather than the scale. And, rate your migraine on a scale of 1 to 10. Well, 1 to 10 is so relative to each person. And people with chronic migraine often have a very high tolerance for pain out of necessity. And so I think that literature can capture what we often can't put into words, that kind of circuitous narrative that is migraine, but it is also life.
It's interesting that you juxtapose scale and narrative as opposites. For those of you listening who may not be acquainted with the world of literature and how it relates to personal disease, that may seem counterintuitive. It may appear to some more technically trained and more familiar with the world of medicine that a scale would be more simple, would be more easily standardized, and literature being so cumbersome and verbose would be quite the opposite. But you, in your experience, think it's the other way around. Help those who may not understand your frame of reference to really understand that, hey, a scale, even though it may seem simple, is truly more subjective and accordingly more uncertain, and as a result, less reliable.
Yeah, I think I would answer that by saying that, first of all, I guess for doctors that this, I don't mean, I'm not a doctor, and so I'm sure that they have some value on in some way. Although I think a lot of the scales that you fill out are probably largely for insurance company purposes, to be honest with you. But I think that I know a couple of headache specialists, both both of whom I worked with, and I know them now well, and I know that they're frustrated by that, those kind of standardized kinds of forms that one uses when you can't standardize migraine. It has so many different symptoms, so many different phases to it. Migraine isn't just, as I said, it's not just a headache, but it also has, it's a cycle that one goes through. And sometimes that cycle can be within a couple, 2-3 days. Sometimes it can be a month. It can last several months. And so you can't put that into a scale. I think part of the problem is, and this is of no fault of the medical professionals, is that they don't have the time to hear the narrative. They just don't have the time. And I think less so now than they've ever had. And yet my retired headache specialist, after reading my book and reviewing it, said that how he wished there'd been such a book when he was still practicing. He could have better empathized with his patients. He could have better understood some of the internal and emotional aspects of migraine. And he could have better treated them. So I think they both probably have a role. It's just that certainly that more medical scientific data driven aspect of treating migraine is not my forte, certainly, and not where my skills and my expertise lie.
Speaking of your book, you include reading selections that reference prominent literature, and you complement those excerpts with your personal journey. Why did you put those together as you were talking about your own personal experiences? You allude to a little bit about your own understanding of your condition, but what broader impressions did you hope to convey by putting the two together?
Yeah, I think, through the writing of the book, I didn't intend it to be a book at the beginning. It was my own, my own kind of journey into finding, the literature that I could connect with, the piece that touched me, a kind of cornerstone for me, that maybe I hadn't been familiar with before. And as I said, it more and more that I dug into it and found, the different genres of literature, all of them, dealing with this subject matter and the experiential side of it, the subjective side of it, I found that I really felt that I could help other people by conveying not only my own journey, but around, I tried to structure the book around five prominent themes related to migraine. And then the works of literature, I chose to go into each of those chapters. However, what I discovered, and I think any reader would discover, is that some of the readings could have been in 2 or 3 chapters because they touch on 2 or 3 of the themes. But I think these themes are really important for those suffering with migraine, but also those who care for those with migraine and also medical professionals. So my audience is really, targeted at not just the sufferer, but those who are family or friends, and also those who want to be better understand it. And then also the medical profession. Because more and more in the medical profession, there are, the requirements for medical humanities. I mean, there are medical humanities requirements. And so it seems to me that, what's going to better help, a young medical student, for instance, or even a very experienced practicing a doctor, better understand his patients than I think through reading this literature.
So let's touch on that a little bit. You've clearly been in touch with many of the readers who've taken your book and used that as part of their personal journey. Can you give 1 or 2 anecdotes on how the book has affected those without migraines but have family or friends with migraines and those who are suffering from the condition?
Sure. I was talking with a young woman probably, I don't know, maybe a couple of weeks ago even. And she, was very kind and about the book, but she said she was going to buy it as a Christmas gift for every one of her friends and family members, because when she read it, there were many pieces that brought her to tears. There were many pieces where she wanted to run over to some particular individual and say, look, read this. This is what I'm experiencing. This is what I try to tell you. In other words, I'm not canceling our social, our lunches because I want to, or because I don't take them seriously. I'm canceling them because I can't anticipate when I'm going to be struck by an attack. And so, because relationships of all kinds are really strained due to a chronic illness, and one invisible like migraine, because you can often function with that migraine, but that doesn't mean that you're well by any means. And you may be functioning enough to just get to work, but that doesn't mean you can do anything socially. And so a lot of friends tend to isolate themselves more from people with migraine over time, because they do have to cancel a lot, or they, you know, they have to sacrifice for their health. So I think that to come back to your question, I think that another one example I can think of personally was, again, we probably a woman, because 75% of all migraine sufferers are women, which is part of the stigma, quite frankly. But a young woman who is a migraine sufferer, but she bought the book for herself, and after reading it, immediately bought it for her mother to read. And then her mother passed it on to her sister, who had what she believes were migraines, but never knew it, never had them diagnosed. So, I mean, I've had some wonderful experiences. You know, you never get into writing a book like this for making money. I mean, you just, because you're never going to make any money. So, you know, to be frank, I mean, permissions alone cost like $10,000 to get permissions for using these pieces in the anthology. So my journey is in just trying to get the book into the hands of people who can benefit from it. And I think that I've heard that it's the stories I hear, you know, whether it's through mm-hmm. social media, or it's through talking with other people on Zoom invites, that kind of thing, where I get the most satisfaction when I hear somebody say, oh my gosh, I needed this. Thank you for writing this. And it's just, that's my goal, you know, is to have people find some comfort. You know, literature teaches us we're not alone. And it shows us we're not alone. And a lot of people suffering from migraine feel very alone a lot of times, because, you know, again, they feel very misunderstood and not listened to.
It's interesting you talk about the power of literature and then the loneliness with migraines. Clearly, you found a link between the two. Had you not been an English teacher, had you not had that formal training, do you think you would have naturally gravitated towards literature? What is it about literature specifically that makes it so adept for patients with migraines?
I think, again, it's the narrative. It's the fact that, you know, a lot of stories and excerpts I've got from novels, for instance, really show a kind of experience over time of the kind of narrative that these individuals, the characters themselves, are dealing with. And so there's so many facets to the literature that people can identify with that I think would draw them in. I guess what I tell people who aren't really, you know, literature readers, I say to them, like I say to my students all the time, as I said in an intro to lit course, many of them don't want to be there initially, and hopefully by the end of the 15 weeks they're glad they were. But, you know, they come in kind of with a negative attitude about literature, and I say to them, you know, for instance, if they say I hate poetry, I say you just haven't found the right poem, you know, you've got to find the right piece. And so not every work in this collection, in this anthology, is going to be the, you know, is going to is going to fit with everyone's experience. But even if you get, you know, four or five pieces, maybe a poem and a short story and an excerpt from a novel, and then you go on and read the novel, then you've touched on that what you needed. And I think that's what literature allows us to do. But you have to bring yourself, be willing to bring yourself to the literature, and to say to yourself, well, I've tried other things. You know, I've tried self-help books, and I'm not trying to disparage those, but, you know, or I've tried, you know, different kinds of, you know, methods of dealing with migraine. Well, I guess I would say, why not try this? I'm not saying it's going to cure your migraines. It's not there to do that. But it's there to help you cope with them better, help people understand you better, and to help you find that not only that comfort, but that kind of catalyst to keep going despite, you know, the really dark times.
Patients with migraines clearly experience that throughout the journey of their condition, the good times and the dark times that you mentioned. Are there certain poignant moments in your own condition where you turned to literature and you found that moment where you said, hey, I have to write that down so people know what I did in my darkest days? Can you share maybe one or two moments where you had that, aha, this is what literature can do for me?
Yeah, I sure can. I mean, this wouldn't be this one. I mentioned the one in graduate school where I read the essay on by Joan Didion called In Bed. And essentially that was one of those wow moments, and except that it left me just sobbing with the reality. This person gets it. This person has really lived it in the way that I live it. But I would say outside of migraine, prominent example I can think of was when my first golden retriever died, and my husband and I don't have children, and so she was like our kid, right? So she was I was very attached to her. She was a very close companion, and I wasn't dealing with the grief of losing her well at all. And a friend of mine sent me a poem by Mary Oliver, who happens to be one of my favorite contemporary poets, who passed only, I think, 3 years ago. She sent me a poem called In Grief. That's not called In Grief. I can't think the name now. And it's about a golden retriever who's died and it's being carried off to be buried. But it captures the mystery of the relationship between human and pet than better than anything I had ever read. And I connected with that, and that drove me to read much more by her. And now I own every piece of poetry she's ever written. I do. Mm-hmm. And so what I found, again, as I said, is it often literature can be a catalyst to, it started me moving, you know, through my grief and reading that poem. And then I started looking for other poems about grief and about getting through grief and by celebrated writers. And that really started my journey of, say, so-called recovery. But, you know, moving on, and being able to get past that dark grief.
It's very interesting, and thank you for sharing that with us. That was very helpful. I want to leave with a more speculative question, and I think you may like this. Putting your putting your policy hat on, and just knowing, one, the prose of your book and the overall message in your book, of who would you like to give your book to? Which policymaker or person in power or of power that has decision-making capabilities, who would you like to give this book to and why?
I'd like to give it to I guess it would be a board of directors for National Institute of Health. I'd like to give it to every member of Congress who has voted against giving more funding for research in migraine. Just to give you a quick, this is a little dated, it's like, but it's the only statistic recent that fairly recent that I can think of. There are 47 million migraine sufferers in the United States. 47 million.
Wow.
75% of those are women. That's part of the problem as to why it's underfunded, to be honest. But the federal government has given the Institute of Health has given $27 million of research money, and this was in 2020, for migraine. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but listen to this. They gave $31 million for the research into anthrax, which a handful of people, you know, suffer from each year.
Right.
47 million suffer from migraine, and look at the disparity in funding for research. The other people I'd like to give it to, I'd love to send a copy to all of my fellow migraine sufferers insurance companies. Oh my, I mean, you don't have time enough to hear. You asked a question that is wide open. Because there's, you know, one of the many sacrifices and difficulties we make in dealing with a complex disease like this is the coverage for the treatments.
Unbelievable.
They come out with these brand new, wonderful, very effective, the efficacy rate is proven treatments, and then insurance companies don't cover them. Or they require prior authorization, or they require you to try three other treatments before you can try the new treatment that is known to be much more effective. And they don't give you, if you suffer, for instance, and I'll leave it at this, but if you suffer from chronic migraine, okay, that means by definition, you have 15 or more migraine days per month. Okay, that's the definition. You get 8 pills of Ubrelvy, for instance, which is one of the newer medications for treating migraine, and very effective, by the way, in company with other things. But if it's to treat a chronic migraine, which is 15 days per month, and you provide 8 pills for that entire month, what kind of sense is that? I mean, let's come back to the federal government. Billions of dollars are lost in productivity because of migraine suffering. And yet we don't see the logic in providing preventative care so that, you know, we don't lose that productivity of people.
Yeah, it's a shame, because these insurance companies are so good at calculating ROIs for patients, but they don't take into account the loss of productivity. And it's almost a situation where if there was an imaging test or a blood test for migraines, so much of the struggle that patients go through just wouldn't be there, because you had a data point. And I think that's why your book is so important, because absent these quantitative figures, you need literature, you need the narrative to help patients understand. And I think your book, so much more than a headache, understanding migraines through literature, is a welcome respite for patients who need something to give them comfort. And as you had mentioned, those dark moments, those dark days. And so I want to leave the audience with one final thing. And Ms. O'Shea, can you let the audience know where they can find your books, where it's located, both online and in retail outlets?
Sure, thank you. I'd love to. It is available at like your independent bookstores. I always push independent bookstores, of course. You obviously can get it on Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. You can get it at most of the local bookstores. Your library hopefully carries it. If not, see that they do, so that others can benefit. You can order it directly through Kent State University Press. You know, Amazon tends to fluctuate prices on it, so on many of their books for some reason. And my press can't seem to get to the bottom of why that is. But if you want a consistent price, just go right straight to Kent State University Press. But Amazon, you know, will be faster. Through my website, www.migrainelit.com, you can order it there. And I also have a Facebook page that's devoted strictly to migraine, and it's called So Much More Than a Headache.
And thank you. And that's publicly available on Facebook, so people can look
Yes.
it up and they can join that.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Shea. Thank you so much
Thank
for your
you.
time.